Blog Talk Radio.
Another Sports Tonight brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. Also, the Abbey Chorus by St. Louis University College. Give Tom a call, 352-588-2016. And Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Tim won't call our show, but give him a call to play golf, 352-588-5454. What a day for the Tampa Bay Rays. Congratulations goes out to David Price. Wins the Cy Young Award winner, first ever in Rays history. And you got to give credit to Jim Hickey, the pitching coach for the Tampa Bay Rays. On this program tonight, we're going to have former Major Leaguer Darryl Knowles, who pitched in the Major Leagues. He's a pitching coach in the Toronto system. And Mr. Rock Raleigh, a sports legend here in the Tampa Bay area. And Frank, you got to get your, you got to say congratulations to David Price. I mean, 20 victories, no run support, first ever Cy Young Award winner, and this Tampa Bay Rays franchise.
I think it's tremendous, Tommy, and I'm sure Don will back me up on that one. When he wasn't in the game, the game wasn't there.
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy and Frank, you're right. It was a great honor for the young man, and they sort of had their eye on him from the very beginning. Remember how quickly they jumped him up getting ready for the World Series, and he had so little experience and used him out of the bullpen, and he just knew he had all the tools to become a very dominant pitcher in the American League, and that's exactly what he's become. And I think it was really no contest, to be honest with you. I thought he was clearly the cream of the crop in 2012.
I think you're exactly right, Don. I talked to Joe Smith, who covers the Tampa Bay Rays for the Tampa Bay Times, and Joe and I were talking in open buck locker room about winning the Cy Young, and all the media started looking at us and said, "Well, it's a Cy Young, and one of ours is going to win this darn thing." And that, which is, I think he did. Justin Verlander, I think, finished a close second, Don, and Verlander had a great year, but David Price. You know, if these fans don't go out and support the Tampa Bay Rays this coming year to watch David Price pitch, this area does not deserve to have a baseball team, Don and Frank. Honest to God, David Price, it's worth the admission. I think David Price, he went up against CC Sabathia back in early May and back in September, and David Price outpitched CC Sabathia. Most important is he's a left-handed pitcher. He could have numbers like lefty Steve Carlton did with the Phillies and the Cardinals right there. And, well, you know.
Well, you certainly expect he's got to become more and more consistent over. He hasn't really reached his peak yet. He's a player that still has a great high potential over and above winning the Cy Young Award. But and quite honestly, I think if I were a voter, I would have voted for him for two reasons. One, Verlander won everything last year. And it gives an opportunity for another player who's equal to or just slightly better this year than Verlander. Verlander's a great pitcher. Mm-hmm. But he won all the awards last year. And so that would give me the inclination to go in another direction to give another young man a chance to win the Cy Young. And that's why I thought, I'd be very honest with you, I thought Price was heads on the choice to win it.
Exactly. That's a great point. But I wish I could ask David Price, the press conference is going on as we're producing the show right now at the Tropicana Field. Oh, I always had David aside. He says, "What's Astro getting for dinner right now?" He's probably cooking Astro a steak when he gets home. But Astro, every time David would pitch, he always looked for me. He says, "All right. What's Astro getting for dinner?"
Well, you know, Tommy, the one thing, and Frank as well, Frank knows this as well as anyone, left-handers normally mature a little bit later than right-handers do, and you can look all the way back to the winningest left-hander of all time, Marnus Spahn. He didn't win a game until he was, I think, 26. I'm almost sure it was 26 years of age, might have been a shade under that, 25 and 9 months. And he's the winningest left-hander of all time. So normally it's, 28, 29, 30 through 35 that left-handers become the dominant pitchers that they can be with that kind of ability. So he's got a great future in front of him.
Exactly. And the thing is, they signed James Shields and Price and Shields and Hellickson. They got a great pitching staff right now. But, Don, what about the owner of the Miami Marlins? Fire sale to the Toronto Blue Jays. And I was just telling Frank before we went on, I did a little bit of work. The owner from the Marlins used to own the Montreal Expos, got in with Bud Selig to have Major League Baseball have the Montreal Expos, and Henry would go own the Red Sox while his Lurie would go down to purchase the Marlins from Wayne Huizenga. And there we go. I mean, the culprit of this case is Bud Selig, who complained about that stadium. They built the stadium out of city funds from the city of Miami, and now a fire sale, and no one's going to go to that beautiful new ballpark this year.
Well, I think two things, Tommy. One, I'd rather go back before you got to the Miami Marlins. I'd like to go back to when Jose Reyes was a member of the New York Mets.
Right.
Mets wouldn't pull the trigger. They wouldn't trade him. All the difficulties they had and all the injuries he had, they had a chance to trade him and really upgrade their ball club 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and they wouldn't do it. They let him play out his option. They got nothing for him.
Right.
So at least Miami's not doing that. At least they're getting something for him. They got a lot of prospects out of the minor leagues.
Right.
How good they're going to be, I don't know. But you're right. They got rid of again. This is about, the third time now that they've devastated that ball club and traded everybody away. But in all honesty, they weren't going to win anyway. So to me, it was a much better move to try to do what Tampa has done over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Get a host of young players, bring them up through the organization. You have
mm-hmm.
4 or 5 years where you don't have to give them big money. You've got them protected. Whereas in the case of Jose Reyes, they gave all that money. And as you pointed out, none of the fans turned out to see the team play. The team did not play well. A lot of that was because of Ozzie Guillen and his comments before the season even got started.
Oh.
A lot of problems there. So, you're right. They devastated the team, but maybe in the long run, 3 years down the road, you got to say, well, they got some players that could really help.
But
hey,
we're
Don, I asked
ceiling.
Tommy before the Predator, I thought that there was a group of people of Hispanic descent that were very wealthy and in the arts and movies and stuff, and that had bought the Marlins. But then I'm reading this morning in the St. Pete Times that the general manager talked about the new stadium and that they've got a lot of right angles. And that was requested by their owner, Jeffrey Lurie. Does Lurie own them?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that's why, it's funny because I was doing some research before the program. Now here, Lurie's taking all that money he's making extra and putting it in his pocket, Don and Frank. And you just can't do that when you own a professional sports team. Now, great example, Stu Sternberg here. Yeah, I mean, he makes the money, puts it right back in the organization. Now, Seabrook's going to come up to Tampa Bay, says, oh, why can't you build a new stadium now? Because Miami did the same thing. Now, where was Bud Scaling, guys, in this whole scandal with a fire sale with the Marlins, and he made the city of Miami build him up a stadium for that ball club, and now and Lurie's got putting all the profits in his pocket. You know, it almost sounds like an Art Modell story when he used to own the Cleveland Stadium Corporation.
Well, Tommy, we've talked about it, and Frank as well. We've talked about it many times in many sports. And, it's a matter of organization. You look at the teams that win, they continue to win. The Yankees don't just win because they spend money. And they do spend more money than anybody else. They're going to get it down to, $186 million, so they don't have to pay that luxury
yep.
tax, going forward. But at the same time, the Tampa Bay Rays have done it just the other way around. They've built through the farm system, and they just signed Shields, as you mentioned, to a relatively big contract for this year. And it's going to be interesting to see now, when you have someone like Price and like Shields, when they become they have the opportunity to become free agents, what are they going to do? Because you're talking, probably $32 to $35 million, Well, even say, let's say they get $17 to $20 million a year for 5 years, say $20 million. That's $100 million. And are the Rays at that point going to be in a position to say, we can still compete with these young men and we're going to be able to keep them in the organization? I don't know if they can. But down in Miami, they've never had any success. I mean, there's never been they won a championship when Huizenga won the team. And as soon as the contracts came up, they got rid of everybody. They won it again when Trader Jack went down and took over for Jeff Torborg. They won it again. And before they even got out of the locker room, they traded everybody away again. So, I can't say. And then you look at the teams you talk about. We talk about Cleveland, your old bailiwick. And how long has it been since they've won? And here in the meantime...
Wow.
The Marlins have won twice, and Tampa Bay's been in the World Series and won the American League Championship a couple of times. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, who's to say what the right way to do it is, but I think you got to have good organization at the top if you're going to win consistently.
Well, you know, guys, we talk about winners, and we've got one right here on the line with us. Tommy, our first guest is ready on the line for you.
I'd like to welcome a Major League pitcher. He had great careers with the Philadelphia Phillies, Oakland A's, and a darn good golfer, Don. Don, you know, Mr. Darryl Knowles. Darryl, good evening. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure, believe me.
Well, we had a great number of years with Darryl with the Philadelphia Phillies and a Veterans Stadium. And before we talk about that, your club made a pretty good trade last night.
Well, you know, I was in Daytona Beach, Florida for the Hall of Fame inductions, the Florida State League Hall of Fame inductions, where Kenny Carson, who's probably a familiar name around here, Kenny Carson was inducted into the Florida State League Hall of Fame last night. But I was over there, and when I heard about the trade, and you know what, I really think if everybody stays healthy, Toronto just became a contender, a really serious contender. And I think everybody probably feels that way. They obviously gave up a couple of good young pitchers and some quality ball players, but what they got in return, if they stay healthy, I think they really are going to be a serious contender.
Well, Darryl, I really thought you were going to be a contender this year, to be honest with you. I thought you had turned a corner, but unfortunately, what you just said is absolutely true. You were devastated by injuries, especially the second half of the year, and I think that took you from maybe 85 to 90 wins to where you actually wound up.
Well, I don't think there's any question. I mean, you know, the three starters went down within 10 days at the major league level, and it just kind of snowballed all the way throughout the organization, and things just did not work the way they obviously planned on them working at the start of the season. And then, you know what, that could happen again next year, but hopefully it will not. It's one of those situations, and I think every organization goes through it. If people stay healthy, when they go in, they think, well, we got a shot or we don't have a shot. But, I mean, it's the same way with Toronto. If the guys stay healthy, and especially these new guys that they've just acquired in this trade, these people stay healthy and perform like they're supposed to, there's no reason Toronto should not be a contender.
Hey, what about David Price? He won the Cy Young tonight. What's that do for his confidence as a pitcher, you know, winning your first ever Cy Young? You've been in this great game for so many years, and you've seen so many pitchers come and go. I mean, what's that going to do? What's it going to do? David Price was still got the same attitude from the next couple of years and many seasons to come. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that if he had not won it, he would have been devastated. I mean, there's no reason he should not have won it. He did win. Obviously had a great year. He's an overpowering pitcher. Probably should have won 3, 4, 5 more games, could have easily if the Rays offense had produced a little bit more. But he was in so many games and he kept them in the ball game and just had a tremendous year. I don't think anybody else can compare to the numbers that he put up over the year, and he definitely is a very deserving winner of that award.
That's for sure, because you've seen all these great pitchers up there, and Justin Verlander. We're talking today over to Buck locker room today. Joe Smith, a good friend of mine from the Tampa Bay Times, and we're saying it's about Verlander winning it and David Price, and I was just hoping and praying David would win this, and hopefully every time he pitches, Rays fans would turn out to see the Cy Young Award winner pitch a baseball game. It'd be great.
There's no question. Verlander obviously is a great, great pitcher, tremendous stuff, played on a winner. But he did not have the year that David had this year. I mean, it's apples and oranges. You can't compare. Price deserved it. He won it. Hats off to him. I think it's great.
Darryl, it's not just money. The Miami Marlins put $191 million in the trades they made coming into this season. And it just didn't pan out for a number of reasons. The problems, like I guess, that Ozzie had early in the year, and the team just never did well come together. And do you think baseball can be successful in Miami?
Yeah, I think they can. You know what? They have tremendous fans down there. I know there's a tremendous amount of Latin American fans down there. The Cuban population has grown tremendously. They are well known to be great baseball fans. I think that Miami supports a baseball team. I think they can win. They've won in the past, but I think you touched on it a little bit a while ago. It seems like the money always winds up being a major issue, and Huizenga, you said, traded them all away, and then whoever the next guy was traded them all away. And I don't think there's any question that probably after the year they had last year, it looks like Miami or the Marlins were dumping some salary, and they got some tremendous quality young ballplayers from the Blue Jays, but what they gave up and what the Blue Jays have inherited, as I said earlier, I think can make them a contender.
How about your years in baseball? What's some of your favorite memories, your favorite cities? can relate some fun stories about that.
Well, you know, that's funny. I came up with Baltimore Orioles way back in 66, got traded after a year to the Washington Senators, loved it in Washington. I was kind of like the closer. I was the big guy, if you will. And then I got traded to the Oakland A's, and I thought, gee, I got to go out there. And they got this guy with that funny mustache that's just going to, you know, he's going to be the closer. It's not going to be me. But it wound up being a great marriage because I just kind of felt like I was a spoke in a big wheel. And we just, you know, after I was there about 3 weeks, I figured out, and, you know, I wasn't very smart probably when it first got traded, but I figured out after about 3 weeks, I said, hey, this club's got a chance to win, and we did. And I was there 4 years. We won 4 division titles and 3 World Series. So it was a great run, and I was proud, and it was a thrill every day knowing that I could maybe help these guys win. And, of course, there was no question Raleigh Fingers was the big horse out of the bullpen. But back in those days with Dick Williams as the manager, Raleigh would get, I don't know, 30 saves. I'd get 15, you know, but he was the guy. And so it was great. And, you know, in this day and age, Raleigh would have got all 45. But Dick Williams was one of those guys.
Now we have to concede that you don't win anything without players, but it's funny that you should just mention starting off at Baltimore. Who was the manager of the year this year, 69-year-old, would be 70 in January, and that's Davey Johnson. He wins the Manager of the Year award again. He won it in Baltimore. He had great administration in Baltimore, great talent evaluators in Baltimore. You go to the Oakland Athletics, they make the movie about Billy Bean, you know, Moneyball, and his concept of how to put it together. They, and even before that, when they were the great winning team for over those 4 years that you're mentioning. And then you come to the Phillies, and they had the continuity upstairs. They had the Pope. They had Dallas Green. They had, it was just a matter of, to me, you got to have administration first. You got to have the people at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And they developed the team. It's not just putting players in there and spending money.
Well, if you're asking me, I definitely agree with that. The whole thing starts at the top, and the top guys have to go out and get the other guys, and they have to mesh them together so that they play with one another. You can be a great player, and you can have 2 great players on a ball club, but if they are at odds with each other, and they all want to be the star, it's not going to work. So they have to be able to give and take a little bit, and I think these, you know, the management groups that you just mentioned, they all did that. They realized that. Obviously, they had great, great ball clubs and great success through the years, and I would like to think that the baseball management of today would learn from all that, and I think they have.
Oh, that's a great point. I got to ask you a funny question there. Did you ever play? You played in the old Cleveland Stadium, right? What'd you think of John Adams, the drummer out there?
That was a long time. That place, he looked so far away back then because there was nobody ever in the stands. That thing held 65,000 people or something. Obviously, it was built for football, I think, or it was used for football mainly in those days. But, yeah, I remember that guy was out there. That was kind of weird to see this drummer way, way out there, it seemed like. But that was, you know what, they have proven that Cleveland is a great baseball town. Back in those days, it seemed like when I played there in the 70s, they were kind of on a low. They had lost for so many years that they just didn't. They hadn't quite regained the thrill of the game, if you will. So, but obviously, they proved that wrong. They are now a tremendous organization.
Darryl, I knew Ruben Amaro's dad a lot longer than I knew Ruben Amaro, but I just think he's done. He had great leadership that he followed as the assistant general manager of the Phillies, and I think he's really come to the floor. This young man, I think, has really matured as he went along, going from the ball field to assistant general manager, and of course, over the last 4 or 5 years, the general manager of the Phillies.
You know what? He is a tremendous guy. I was there, happened to be coaching there and working in the organization when he was hired as a general manager. I was kind of surprised, if you will, that a guy of that youth and inexperience was becoming a GM. But through the years, he has proven that that's not necessarily the case. And I, you know what? I think hats off to him. And he's always been a class guy. I knew his father as well. His father was a class individual.
Oh, baby, was he ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we worked together with the Phillies back in the day. But Ruben Jr. Never fails. And I think this is great. He never fails if he sees me to come over and say hello, because he knew that we worked together and that his father and I were friends. So I always think that's a great thing.
You know, I think he does that. If you go to the ballpark and he comes down on the field, he does that with almost everyone. I mean, he walks to anybody that he knows or anybody that even maybe he didn't know before. He goes over and introduces himself, and he just has that way about him that really impressive.
Yeah, he's a quality young man. He's a quality baseball person. He's proven that, you know, you got to think. I know he has some advisors over there with Dallas Green, and now Eddie Wade is back over there. Guys that have had a little bit more experience, you might say, but
right.
I think Ruben is really calling the shots. And you know what? It's his neck. If it doesn't work, and if it does work, kudos to him. And so far it's worked. I know they had a little bit down year last year, but they got Halliday and Lee and those guys. They're all going to and Hamels. They'll be back.
Well, you mentioned Eddie Wade, and of course, he was the assistant GM for such a while. And then, unfortunately, got down in Houston, things just didn't work out. And Houston's going to go over, of course, to the American League next year and try to rebuild the whole operation. And then I was very happy to see that he got back with the Phillies, because he's a local Delaware Valley guy, and I think he's happy to be back in Philadelphia.
Well, I'm sure he is. That was kind of his roots, if you will. I know Lee Thomas was the general manager and brought him over there back actually when I was coaching there, which was 89, 90, back in there. And Eddie was kind of the guy that was just kind of learning the ropes. And then he took over and did a tremendous job for a few years. Then he went to Houston. And unfortunately, I don't know, he kind of caught them in a rebuilding phase and
right.
Downhill. And he got let go. And he's now back with the Phillies. And I'm sure he's very comfortable. He's around people he knows, and I'm sure he's an asset.
In all your great years of baseball, who's the toughest guy you had to strike out?
only 25 on a team now.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, what guy gave you the most problems? I'm sure I should say.
I can answer this very easily, because you know I played 15 years in the big leagues, or I pitched 15 years in the big leagues. I had some very very good numbers. I'm very proud of my career. But one guy I was two guys. One was Roberto Clemente. Only faced him 1 year, and that was 1966. And I really think he was 7-for-7 off me that year.
Oh,
now, that was only the 1 year. Then I got traded in the American League. But after that first year, the one guy that gave me the most trouble was a guy by the name of Rod Carew. Obviously a great hitter. He gave a lot of people trouble. But everybody else I got out. I don't know what the heck. No, that's not necessary.
Now, some of the new rules that are under consideration right now, I'd like to have you comment on those. One, which I think is great, and Joe Torre talked a lot about it. I really do think it's unfair to take that 25-man roster and jump it to 30 at the end of the season when, to me it's a disadvantage for a lot of reasons. I think the biggest month of the year is September, and you're giving five extra men, and so I think they ought to cut it to 28 or 27. I don't think it should be 30 or five additional players.
Well, I think that's, personally, I think, I mean, again, personally, I think that's too many. I mean, I'm sort of a traditionalist. I know it's always 25. It's always been 25. There's always periods, and now they've extended. They got two rounds or three rounds of playoffs before you ever get to the World Series. Things back up on you. I don't think it would hurt if they added a couple guys, but 30, I think that's way too many. I mean, go to 27 maybe. You add a couple pitchers, you can get over the hump if you have to. But then you can look at it the other way, and it means those other guys that are on that pitching staff that don't get the pitch and that helped you get there all year, I mean, are you doing them justice? So, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. And, I what's right, I don't know. You know, I didn't like the DH either. I still don't like it, but it's there. So, and people seem to love it.
How about the replay? They're sort of, you know, back and forth about what they're going to do about replay.
Well, I don't want to take it out of the umpire's hands, I mean, personally. But there are certain things in certain situations. And, I think, you know, what – I don't know. I mean, I have thought about this. I've listened to a lot of arguments about it. And maybe it would – maybe it wouldn't hurt to do kind of like they do in football. I hate to give football any credit, but to give them two challenges of a game or something like that. I mean, it's a possibility that it might help. I mean, obviously, the umpires do a tremendous, tremendous job, and it's all human element. But they make mistakes just like everybody else. And if it's a key mistake that may make that may turn the whole ball game around, well, let's kind of check it out. Let's see. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it would benefit baseball.
I agree, because they lost the perfect game. I mean, that's one of the best umpires in the American League, but they lost the perfect game. You can't make that up. I mean, to me, to have a one challenge or a two challenge, the play at second base that they talk so much about this year, I mean, to me, and if you watch, not necessarily pro football, I don't like the way they do it, but if you watch college football, they have the decision made within 30 seconds. I don't know if it was Torrey that said it at the meetings or whatever. He said by the time the manager comes out, the coaches come out, and they argue back and forth, and everybody talks, it takes 10 minutes for that before they get the field cleared. They can do it in 30 seconds with a replay like they have in college football.
Well, that's very true, because obviously one of the biggest problems with baseball today is it drags out. Now, I know I can sit here at home, which I do often, and, you know, I come home at night and I watch a Major League Baseball game, turn it on TV, and the game, they have an inning, and then you have to wait for TV. It drags it out. Obviously, TV pays the money. I understand the system, but if they could do it quickly, I think it would help the game, and I don't have a problem with it. I really don't.
I agree.
I don't want to take it away from the umpires. The umpires should have 90% of it, or 95. You know, it's just a couple calls maybe that might turn it around.
Well, I think when you look at it, you look at the umpire evaluation, and we've had a couple of umpires on the show many times, and, you know, 99 and probably 0.5%, they're right. The one half of 1% that you're talking about, but at the same time, that one half of 1% can really be a determining factor in a team winning a pennant or a team winning a series game or winning a playoff game. And I agree. I think two challenges would not be unfair.
No, I don't. I think that too. But now whether they'll ever do it or not, I don't know.
Well, none of us do.
You know, I can live. I can live with it either way. You know, if they don't do it, they don't do it. But I take my hat off to umpires. I think umpires have a tremendously difficult job. And they do the best they can. I don't think anybody is ever trying to go for one team or another team. If they miss something, they miss it. But what the heck? The whole idea is to get the call right, and let's get it right.
Exactly. Because the umpires we had in this show, Jim McKean, Richie Garcia, you know, I always said to Jim and Richie that the umpires are having, you know, they're one of the best. You know, umpire sports is game of baseball, and also about being there at the game of baseball. My dad got drafted by the St. Louis Browns, and then he had arm problems, and he couldn't make the Major League Baseball time. But he played baseball up in here in Ohio. I didn't tell you this story on Saturday, but with Jim Campbell, who was then GM manager of the Detroit Tigers. And now my dad wrote Jim Campbell a letter back in 74. Don Frank probably knows this guy, Mike Socia, who was catcher of Springfield, Delaware County. So, unfortunately, the Dodgers drafted him, so he got a letter back from the Tigers. There's Skip. Next time you have an evaluation of a player, I'll listen to you.
Well, you didn't have to be too smart to pick Socia out.
Yeah. But they're passing the buck up in here in Ohio for playing Major League Baseball. They're passing the buck up there, and I have to show you one day the articles about my dad in there, and he could have been a great pitcher, but I'm looking at his glove right now. God bless him. But he said, well, I have to go stick to bat on the railroad, a longshoreman, and the steel workers for 30-some years. And that's what he did.
That was a very interesting point that you could probably talk about better than any of us, and that is the guy works behind the plate with you. And Joe Girardi was questioned and questioned and questioned all year about leaving Martin behind the plate, only hitting 205 or 210. And, you know, I go back as far as Jimmy Hegan and some of the great catchers. Roy Campbell, of course, was an offensive hitter. But to me, the catching is a very lost art in Major League Baseball right now. There aren't really many very good catchers. And I think Joe was absolutely right. Regardless, Martin's a great catcher. Why would you – what are you worried about whether he hits 225 or 230 or 240 when you're going to weaken the position by taking him out?
Well, I cannot disagree. I'll tell you a little story. Every year in spring training, or the season breaks, and obviously I'm in the minor leagues, but I mean the season starts, and I take the catchers aside, and I tell them, look, I don't care if you ever get a hit, ever. You get a hit, great. That's a plus. But I said you have to help me take care of these pitchers. You have to work with them. You've got to learn them. You got to block balls. You got to throw people out. You got to just worry about the catching. I know they don't want to hit 200, but I really feel that's a tremendous part of the game. And I don't care if they ever get a hit. Personally, I know they're probably not going to advance if they don't. But it is a lost art. I think it's more about handling pitching staffs, being able to do the little things, the blocking balls, allowing the pitcher to have the confidence to throw breaking balls in the dirt when they want to. All those things play into it, and catching is a tremendous, tremendous part of the game. And if you don't have that good quality catcher, you're not going to win.
Well, we only live a few blocks away from Timmy down here in Almond, Sarasota. He's right out on Siesta Key, which is not too far away. He joins us on the program every now and then, and you got to be a pretty good catcher because you got a guy on third base and you got Steve Carlton pitching, and you know he's going to throw that big slider. You can't be afraid to call it. It's going to go in the dirt, but you better be there to call it.
That's exactly right. And those two guys were great together. I mean, obviously that deal. Timmy was Carlton's personal catcher for a number of years, and you know what. Carlton had a lot of confidence in him, and they worked great together. And look at Lefty, look at his numbers. I mean, he was obviously one of the greatest pitchers ever.
Right.
Exactly. This is the same thing about with the Rays. I mean, the Rays fans are, you know, start yelling at Molina. But Molina, you know, I mean, he only hit like 220, like you were saying, but he blocked the plate. He threw runners out. And that's the main thing what Joe Maddon wanted to. Just re-sign Molina from his stage with the Angels is a guy block the plate, make sure the pitches work well together. I mean, that's the whole thing about re-signing for another year, and I think it's a great move by the Rays to do that.
I agree with you. I'm sure they probably got some young buck coming up that is going to get a lot of the catching, but their game right now. You talk about the Rays, and I mean, I think their game. His pitching, defense, the offense hasn't stepped it up just yet, so they cannot afford to weaken any of it, and catching is a big part of it, so they better keep him. And then obviously they did, and I think that's a big plus for them.
Darryl, you talked about at the top of the show when we talked about the trade consummated last night between Toronto and Miami, but you were in a better position to give us sort of a thumbnail sketch of the minor league setup for the Toronto Blue Jays. They have some very, very outstanding young people coming along. They've had a history of bringing some pretty darn good players through the system, and How's the minor league system look for Toronto right now?
Well, I think one of our big pluses is, you know, the last couple, 3 years has been pitching. The young man Nicolino that they let go was part of the big three, if you will, between Nicolino, a kid named Sanchez, and a kid named Syndergaard. He was left-handed. He was the only left-hander of the three, but Sanchez and Syndergaard probably have a little bit better velocity in their arms, but I always thought for the last couple of years, I said, this Nicolino is going to be a good one, and I'm really sorry to see him leave. He was in low A last year. I was probably going to have him this year. Obviously, that's not going to happen now, but he's a tremendous young pitcher. I'm sure they're sorry to leave him to let him go. But excuse me, the other guys, along with the Blue Jays have got probably 8 or 10 young quality arms, but they're young. I mean, that's the key thing is, you know, they have to develop just a little bit more. They got Chad Jenkins in Double A last year. You know, I'm sorry, my mind's kind of is going blank here now, but I'm thinking about all these guys. They've come through me, but they've got some quality arms. And Chad Jenkins obviously went to the big leagues, did a good job for the Blue Jays last summer. But there's plenty of good quality arms, and it's just a matter of keeping everybody healthy, and you got to have some people around to catch the ball. I think is the one thing that probably has hurt the Blue Jay organization. Maybe we don't have enough good young defensive ball players up the middle to catch the ball, and you got to have defense to help the pitching out. So, and everyone's aware of this. I mean, probably every organization has the same problem. So it's not just the Blue Jays. But as far as prospects go, we have as many as any.
How about the pitch count, Darrell? Are you a pitch count guy?
You know, Paul Mason is who's a good friend, and I argued about this last year. We didn't really argue about it. We agreed on it. I'm not from the – I mean, I just put this, I'm kind of an old-school guy. I don't think they ought to be limited that much. I understand the fact that they're trying to protect them, but I think there's a different way they can do it. But that's not my call, you know, and there's guys now, there's organizations like the Texas Rangers, understand, letting their pitchers go, 100 pitches, 110 pitches. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, all the years that I played years ago now, I mean, nobody ever talked about a pitch count.
I would have thought that, for instance, Strasburg, if they were going to put that kind of a limitation on that, maybe he didn't think he was going to develop that as quickly as he did, but you put Davey Johnson in a terrible spot. I mean, if you're going to do that, start him the 1st of May or start him the 15th of May. Mm-hmm. Let him pitch in the minor leagues for April. Bad weather anyway in Washington in April. Let him pitch in Florida. Let him pitch somewhere else and bring him up the middle of May or the 1st of June. And then at least you got him to go till the end of the season and into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if they worried about where he pitched. They were just worried about how much he pitched. And,
right.
And the guy had he's got a tremendous arm. I know he had a great year. I haven't seen yet where they have somebody to second guess the Nationals because they didn't win. Who knows if Strasburg had gone on and thrown a shutout one game or something, they might have won the thing. I don't know.
You don't get that many chances to get there.
Yes. Great point.
That is the big argument. That is the big argument. But we'll see. You know what? If they come back next year and have a very successful year, then it'll all be forgotten. And,
right.
David Johnson is a great friend of mine. We came up through the minor leagues together. Known Davey. Well, he's 70. I'm 70. So we've been around a long time. And I respect him. I know he's a great baseball guy. And I would like to think that he's obviously thinking of the player as well.
Hey, Tony, exactly. We're joined by the Reverend Dr. Roger also.
Oh, okay. I'm
really enjoying listening to this. love to talk baseball all year round.
Roger, you got the floor.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, talking about AAA, the Braves just announced that former Philly Randy Reddy is going to be the manager of the Gwinnett Braves this coming year.
It, if you're talking to me, I was with Freddie Gonzalez last night. He also got inducted into the Florida State League Hall of Fame last night.
Really? Oh,
and,
wow.
Oh, great.
Yes, he did. And, yeah, along with Dave Tremblay and said Kenny Carson, and there was
great.
An umpire. I don't know. There was you know, a few people that got it, but, you know, it was a great honor. I'm sorry, I can't remember everybody's name, but we were talking about what were we talking about? What'd you ask me? I'm sorry.
No, we were talking about Randy Reddy.
Randy was a player when I coached in the Phillies. Great hitter. I mean, nobody played any harder than Randy did. And actually, we got him and John Kruk, I think, in the same deal back years ago from San Diego. But Randy
right.
has been
You're
around
right.
the game, and he's done a tremendous job. And I know he's been in the minor league system and works very, very hard. And I thought that was a great, great signing for him to be the AAA manager. And if, you know what, I would be surprised to see him in the big leagues in a couple of years.
Darryl, one great thing about Kruk is that he proves that great conditioning is what makes you a ball player.
I had to tell you a story about John Kruk. I was coaching the big leagues for the Phillies, and we got Kruk and Reddy, as I said, in the trade, and we played about a week, and of course Kruk never had the great physique that a lot of guys are lucky enough to have. We played a night game on Saturday, and Sunday we're playing in Philly, a day game. And I get to the ballpark, and it's about 11 o'clock, and I kind of walk in, and they got a little lunchroom-like thing there, and he is sitting there, and he was eating two chili cheese dogs Sunday morning. I'll never forget that. You got to go play a doubleheader.
Oh, no.
Go play. Oh, yeah. He said, "Breakfast of champions." I never forget.
You know what else he said one time? He said, "I'm not an athlete. I'm a ball player."
Well, I'll tell you one thing. He can hit in the closet. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yes he could. He was great.
Well, that's a great honor for Ken Carson, the Florida State Hall of Fame. Next time you see him, tell you're on the Tommy G Show, he'll start cracking. He'll tell you stories of every Darryl.
I will do that. I know he's a big favorite, so that's good. And I see him quite often. So.
What he did to that Blue Jay ballpark, right? Back in the 70s at Grant Field, what he did to it now, and he ran that great organization for the Dunedin Blue Jays for so many great years, and it was a pleasure to know when he ran that great ballpark. We stopped him representing the Lightning, and we confirmed about having a Lightning Blue Jay Day about a couple of years ago, and funny story about that. This is comic. These guys know that. You know, one guy was supposed to show up, never did show up. And thank God I seen two guys were sitting there, Shane O'Brien and Jason Ward were sitting in the stands, and I said, "Guys, this is our night here. Could you do me a favor? Sign some autographs?" And honest to God, they're in front of the front gate there, and their line was halfway around the stadium for them to sign autographs. So
beautiful.
The night was successful after all, thanks to Kenny Carson and ourselves did a lot of marketing for the two organizations. It was great to work with Kenny.
Well, Kenny's been around here a long time, and you know, he's a big part of it, and I know he's a favorite of Paul Beeston's and the Toronto organization, and he's been here in Dunedin for a long time, so I'm proud to know him.
Now, let me ask you this. Let's go to the St. Louis Cardinals for a minute, because what a rapport they had between their manager and their pitching coach and the job that they were able to do. And how do you come up with a situation? Some guys are great pitching coaches and they're catchers. Some guys are great pitching coaches and they're pitchers. But yet they're all not great pitching coaches. You know, how do you make your determination if you're, you know, the manager of a major league ball club? How do you go about deciding what kind of a pitching coach you want to work with?
Well, that's a great question. But let me go back as far as this. Obviously, you talked about Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan, and they were great together for so many years.
Same thing in Baltimore. Duncan,
well, yeah, exactly. But La Russa and Duncan, if you will, were always great friends from the Oakland A's days years ago. And when La Russa got into the managing thing, he and Dunk kind of got into Dunk became a pitching coach. And Dunk was very, very good. Dunk had a great idea about pitching. And I think there's more to being a pitching coach than being able to teach somebody a slider or a curveball or keep their balance. I mean, every pitching coach is worth his salt at all knows that pitching is all about rhythm and balance and release point. And that, I mean, anybody can tell you that, but it's about getting in their head, and I think Dave Duncan did that as well as anybody. And he taught them how to know what to throw, to know when to throw certain things. And, yeah, I'm not saying he didn't teach them how to throw certain pitches. I think he was a big advocate of the split at one time. Mm-hmm. And obviously he had great success with it. So he's got some he's gotten some great raves through the years. I think he deserves all of it. I actually pitched to Dave Duncan in Oakland. He was mm-hmm. our catcher the first year I was over there, and I've known Dunk for many, many, many years. So hats off to him as well. I think he did a great job. Tony La Russa and him worked together, and that's part of it too. The two guys have to work together. One has to trust the other, and I think they did that.
Well, the guy that comes to mind quickly for me is Jim Cott, because even though Jim wasn't a pitching coach very long, he's a Hall of Fame broadcaster now, and I think you ought to be in the Hall of Fame as a player, to be honest with you. But he made himself over. I mean, he was a power pitcher, hurt his arm, and then he came back, and he was a pinpoint control pitcher. And, you know, when you sit down with Jim Cott, I mean, Kitty really talks pitching. I mean, he talks about what it's really all about.
Well, Kitty is, I hate to say this, because it's kind of making me sound like I'm old, but he's also a great friend of mine. I mean, I've known him for a number of years.
You are old.
You're exactly right. Yeah, I am old. You're right. I'm getting there. Some days I feel it more than others. Kitty was a great pitcher, and you're right. He was a power pitcher that turned into a finesse pitcher, realized that that one pitch wasn't working or things weren't working. He made the adjustments. There's another guy, Dennis Eckersley, did the same thing. He became a great pitcher in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You're talking about pitching coaches with managers as a team. Look at Bobby Cox and Leo Mazzoni for all those years. And, of course, Leo's doing the morning show, part of the team on the morning show on 680 The Fan in Atlanta now. And he was saying a couple of weeks ago, I found it very interesting, he said, a coach is only as good as his players, which is obviously very true, because then when he went to Baltimore and got a better deal financially, he didn't have the success because he didn't have the horses with mm-hmm. Baltimore that he had with the Braves all those years.
Well, he didn't have Smoltz, Maddox, and Glavine. That's what he didn't have. So,
that's hard to find.
Jen, I'd like to walk through the program. This guy's our Tampa Bay legend who loves the game of baseball. Great time to have him on there. And our golf pro, Dan, from Roger's Buddy up in Pennsylvania. I'd like to first welcome this man is a legend, Mr. Baseball himself. We call him Mr. Rock Rowley. Rock, good evening. You're talking to Don, Roger, and also Daryl Knowles, a former Major League great pitcher. Rock, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure and honor. You got quite a crew there, man. Very, very good, Tom.
Well, what about David Price, Rock?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, really, with any pitchers, you just never know. You never know injury-wise. But as long as he's healthy, I mean, the sky is the limit. His pitching coach, Jim Hickey, was on today saying that there's parts of his pitching that they're going to work on, and they've told him to work on it, and it's going to be as far as his move to first base is really bad. And it might not seem like a lot, but with the amount of stolen bases against him, he might have 1, 2, 3 more wins.
Let me tell you, ask Pettit whether it's important or not.
How about that, right? And his teammate, James Shields, has one of the best moves. Of course, he is a righty, but no, seriously, David Price is so young and just – I remember going into the clubhouse and asking his catcher, what was really working today this year? He's like, are you kidding me? The guy's got a 97, 98 mile an hour fastball. Seven lefty with movement. He really doesn't need to throw much more. But just a few little things they're going to fine tune. And I wasn't sure if he was going to get it or Verlander. And then he tweeted out that he was heading to the Trop. He was wearing a suit, and I figured they wouldn't go. They wouldn't go through all that if they didn't kind of get tipped off that he was going to get it. So I was glad for the young man.
No question. No, before you came on, we were chatting about it, and maybe you'd articulate on this a little bit. That is the fact that, to the best of my knowledge, most of the great left-handed pitchers always develop later. I mean, I even thought about Warren Spahn not winning until he was 26 years old. And this young guy, I mean, he's got nothing but glory in front of him if he stays healthy.
Exactly, and he's got a real his personality is like a lot of fun. He's always keeping everybody loose and light. And, of course, it's different when he's on the mound. But and you look at it, too. Okay, he led the American League in ERA, and he had 20 wins. But the lineup for the Rays was putrid. I mean, he didn't get a lot of run support. You know what I mean? It could have, yeah, it could have been even higher.
Exactly. You know, I love to talk to David Price now. We're rocking everybody. I would say one thing. All right, David, you won the Cy Young Award. What's Ashley going to get fed for the year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's that dog you're talking about. Yeah.
Dell, who was the over your years of in the major leagues, who was the pitcher that had the best stuff that never delivered?
That's pretty tough. That's a tough question. That never delivered.
If we want to make you work here, we don't want to give you. We don't want to give you the easy stuff.
I was going to say I have to go, but let me put it this way. I never knew a pitcher that had great stuff that didn't deliver. I mean, it was, I really can't think of one guy that I thought, man, this guy should win a lot more than he did. I mean, back in those days when I was playing, I never thought about that. I just thought about us, you know, the women, and we were all teammates, and there's a lot of guys I saw had great stuff that never became great pitchers, but they all contributed, and I that's a tough question. I got a pass on that. I can't even think about that.
We'll give you a pass.
Yeah, we'll give you a pass. Right, no big deal about that. So, but Darryl, is it great to have you on, sir? We have to have you on before spring training starts. Anytime I'm talking hot stall baseball, it's always a pleasure to have you on, sir. And thank you again for your support for the Dunedin Christmas Fund. From Eddie Michaels to myself goes right to the heart. So thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, and I really enjoyed it.
You know,
good luck.
And I remember your great days with the Phillies.
Yes, we do.
So
absolutely right.
You guys have a great night. Okay.
You too. Take care.
Take care. We'll have to get you on back. We'll have to get you on back again. Well, hey, Rocky, I got a question for you. Big question today. Can the Bucks make it? Can the Bucks win in Carolina? And can they stop Mr. Cam Newton?
They should. You know, I was looking at it today, guys, and Carolina has lost 6 of 7. They had a lot of close losses, but this last one, they lost 36-14 to Denver. They fired their special teams coordinator. The GM was fired October 22nd. So you know how it goes, though, in the NFL, man. I mean, Brad Johnson used to always tell me, you cannot go by what happened the week prior because the difference is not that much. But really, the Buccaneers, the way they're moving the ball on offense, they should come away with a win Sunday in Carolina. Then they have the Atlanta Falcons here following week.
Well, they had a big injury, though, this week that's going to hurt him. He's out for the rest of the season.
And not only that, yeah, you're talking about linebacker Quincy Black, and it looks like today Shiano said Adam Hayward, who's been playing pretty good on special teams, he'll probably be the starter in place of him. But today, their starting right guard, Jamon Meredith, was walking around in crutches, and Jeremy Zuta, who moved over from center to guard, he couldn't practice today because I believe it was his ankle, and it was pretty – so their offensive line is banged up. But it's amazing with two Pro Bowlers out. If you notice, and I always say this, I can remember seeing Buccaneer quarterbacks. You'd see them at halftime going in. They'd have grass stains on the back of their jersey. They were always on their back. Seriously, Freeman has not been touched. And they've also opened up holes for the running back. It really is a testament. It's incredible what the offensive line and the blocking schemes and the coaching, what they've done.
Hey, Rock, exactly. if you have any insight as to who we can call, Roger and I are looking for another job. We could fill those two positions.
Yeah. You know, they're looking. I know. And the one thing that I do like about Chiano, he never complains about injuries. Like when Gruden was here, he would say, I'm not going to make excuses. And then he would always say, well, we got so-and-so down. We got so-and-so down. Shannon never complained about that. I do like that about him.
Well, that's what happened at Pittsburgh on Monday night. I mean, that was, if you listen to that post-game show on Monday night after the game, you're exactly what you're talking about is exactly what they said. Next man up. That's it. I don't even speculate on what's going to happen as far as the X-rays are concerned. I'm concerned about is who can play.
Right. That's
exactly
what you have to have. Yep.
You know, fellas, I want to tell you that there's a lot of national people that feel that the Bucs are on their way to being in the playoffs. They are a team to watch because they feel that they're going to get better and better, and Chiano is really developing that team, and you see it all the time. So I'd like to have, you know, your feelings about them making the playoffs.
Oh, well, you know what? They are in the hunt. The only problem is, man, the pass defense. But I had somebody in the NFL tell me, you look now around the NFL, offenses are just moving the chains, throwing the ball. So you're going to give up some yardage. It's real weird. The Bucs are almost last in pass defense, but they're number one against stopping the run. And at least they have that down. Offensively, you know, Tom, when we listen to Josh Freeman, he's like, you know what, at this point now, pick your poison. If defensive coordinators are going to stack the box, they're going to take away the kid, Doug Martin, then I'm going to throw it up. Vincent Jackson, he was the number one free agent receiver out there. He's tall and he's so athletic. Mike Williams is your other receiver. When you have two receivers like that, the way Freeman has got the confidence now and the running game, the Buccaneers never feel like they're out of it even when they're down. And we've never seen that with an offense like that ever that I can remember.
Never.
In the NFL.
Well,
right.
I'll tell you one thing about their defensive secondary. I mean, Barber has really surprised me. With the length of time that he's been in the National Football League, I mean, he starts with his head and then he goes with the rest of his ability. But look at the anticipation he had last Sunday. You know, I mean, just incredible the way he has been able to change his game from strictly athleticism to what he's doing now.
Guys, when you see him walking around, like when he doesn't have his pads on and walking, he's got like a permanent limp. His one knee, he can't even put it out straight. And yet, 16 years, and he's a little guy.
Right.
And when you see him out there in the field, it really is incredible. And he credits the young kid out of Alabama who's a rookie, Mark Barron, who didn't know the NFL game but knew how to play the position of safety. And he's like, you know what? I've been in the NFL 16 years, but I played a different position. I learned some things from Mark Barron. And then, of course, Barron has learned from Rondé. They all have. On just how he goes about his business. But in fan voting as of today for the Pro Bowl, Rondé Barber is in first place at the free safety position. How about that?
Isn't that amazing? I'll tell you, I thought Gruden made a great point on the Monday night game, and he said that if you're going to play a corner position in National Football League, you better be able to tackle. And you can tell the difference between the teams that win and the teams that lose, because you get the guys out on the corner one-on-one. If they can't take you down, you know, it's yards after catch. You're talking 10 or 15 yards every time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Don, we were talking about that the other day. And think about the really good Eagles teams that Andy Reid had. You know, he had Troy Vincent initially and Bobby Taylor. Troy Vincent, a tremendous tackler, who also they removed the safety. And if you can't tackle, you're not going to be able to play safety. And Bobby Taylor was a cover guy, you know, on the outside. Then when they got Sheldon Brown and Lito Shepherd, they developed them and two great tacklers. Now look at these two guys that they have.
So they have two people. Do they have two outside line outside men?
And they can't tackle.
They couldn't tackle my mother.
Yeah, they can't tackle.
Well, you know what? With the new collective bargaining agreement, these guys aren't allowed to put on pads hardly at all.
Right,
and a lot of fundamentals in tackling. And it's funny because when Schiano got here, their number one pick from a couple of years ago, Gerald McCoy, he had him doing basic, fundamental, how to tackle properly. And McCoy came over, he goes, wow, I haven't had practice like this since I was a kid. And it's amazing. Like a lot of these kids, they're superstars in high school. They're superstars even at the collegiate level, and they haven't gotten back to the fundamentals. And that's what Schiano did. You might have seen that, Tom, over at training
yes.
camp. They were going over basic fundamental tackling drills, and it has been a huge improvement compared to last year under Raheem Morris.
Thank you for saying that, Rock.
It's not only football. It's any sport. And it goes back probably 10 years ago. I was at the Rutgers to see a women's basketball game against Notre Dame, and I love Muffet McGraw. What a great coach, is a great person. But there was a freshman who was like an All-American on that team, and she missed foul shot after foul shot. And I went up to her after the game, and I said, I introduced myself, and I said, you know, can I make a suggestion to you? I notice you don't hold the ball the same way every time you take a foul shot. And she said, really? And I said, yeah, just think about it. Go back and watch the video. You know, always go with the seams, you know, across.
Uh-huh.
She took my hand and she said, thank you, sir. Nobody ever brought that to my attention.
Wow.
This is a freshman at the University of Notre Dame.
Wow.
Wow.
Hey, guys, how about what happened in the NBA last night between the Washington Wizards? I think, Rock, you've probably seen this highlight. I just saw it today, right? The guy goes up, you know, goes for a shot, gets blocked, right? Then his teammate sneaks to the NBA, the foul line. The referee tossing the ball. He makes the one shot. Uh-oh. He looks over to the coach. He stayed on the line, and the referee's finally waked up. He had that guy originally shot the shot, you know, shoots the two foul shots, and there were two bricks.
Unbelievable.
So the Generals live on in the NBA, Don.
That's amazing. God. It's amazing. Well, I've
got
to say
this.
The point that you made a little bit earlier, though, about don't worry about what last week's game, how it looked to you on television or how you saw it when the press box. Because, you know, the margin of difference now, what are there, three teams now, maybe four, that separate themselves from everybody else. Anybody can win with the rest of the guys. I mean, it's mediocre at the best.
No,
Don? You know what I was happy to see with the Falcons yesterday, and it was late last night, I guess. What's today? Wednesday. I guess it was late Monday night. They dumped a big salary and took a big hit on the salary of Ray Edwards. They signed him for big bucks last year. He has not produced. They bit the bullet, and they're taking a big hit for about $5 million on him, and they got rid of him. That tells me that's a team that wants to win and will make the moves to win.
Gentlemen, this is time for a PGA update for their golf tip of the week. I'd like to welcome our residing pro here on the network. Good evening. How you doing this evening?
Hey, guys. Did anybody miss me?
Hey,
yes.
Hey, Doug, I got to tell you, let the guys know you also were a starting outfielder for George Washington University, correct?
That's right. I was just having a good time listening to you guys talking about baseball, and it kind of brought back some memories. And, you know, I think baseball was my first love, and you know, I spent some time. I didn't play at the major league level like some of your guests tonight, but I can certainly appreciate the game and the nature of what you guys were talking about. It's good stuff.
I'll tell you,
I think Roger's
a
number
great
one
school.
With his staff,
I mean,
too,
academically,
right?
That's one of the top schools in the country.
Well, I think first and foremost, the idea was not only to continue you know, playing baseball at a high level, but you know, I walked away from there with a pretty solid education, and you know, that's unfortunately in today's sports society, you know, when you talk about a lot of these kids that maybe go play basketball for a year and then go to the NBA or you know, don't necessarily finish up their college educations, it's, you know, it's the trend of today's athletes, and you know, that was the real reason why I picked that university. Was it was a good blend of both high academics and high athletic prowess
right
there for me. So,
well, I think the one thing that separates the Ivy League and some of the schools in the Patriot League as well, the Ivy League made a decision football-wise. You know, they play their games. They don't go out and try to, you know, go to a bowl game and spend a lot of money. The kids that play because they want to play, and not that they don't play at a high level. But in basketball, if you play in the Ivy League, you have one game on Friday night, and then you play one game on Saturday night. You know, these teams are playing Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights. They're traveling
yep.
500 miles.
Yep.
I mean, it's unbelievable what they're doing now.
No education for the kids.
Well, I can tell you, the first going on baseball season, you know, the NCAA actually mandated that you had to have one day completely off from travel, practice, or games. And for us, that was Mondays. And as you can imagine, during baseball season, I can almost tell you that Mondays was pretty much the only day that I went to class during season, just because of the nature of the schedule. So, you know, what that teaches you as a 18, 19, 20-year-old, you know, kid, if you will, is how am I going to get my education by, you know, networking with kids that are in my classes or going to see my teachers on my time or, you know, obviously in today's society with more technology that's involved, you can get archives or what have you of some of the classes, but it kind of puts that at that first and foremost, because if you don't get the grades, you don't play. That's the bottom line. So, you know, what are you going to do? You got to make sure you take care of yourself.
Speaking about picking, you picked those football games all good last week. You were the winner.
I don't know who has the golden microphone trophy for the week, but all I can tell you is I was 11-2.
I know you won. You won the things. Speaking about football, it's our pleasure to welcome a good friend of the program. Does a great job of communication with the Outback Bowl. We missed him the last couple weeks. I left a message for him and glad to get him on. Mike Schotze. Mike, good evening. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Mike.
Great.
Well, Mike, you're in the home stretch now. Brother, what a number of teams you have in the college. We were just talking about, you know, the National Football League and how many teams are really good. But in college football, boy, you really have a landslide of talent this year.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been real interesting, hasn't it? I mean, you know, as I've always said on your show, I mean, that, you know, our saying around the office is every week something's going to happen you don't expect. And that's what's so much fun about college football. And sure enough, you know, just about every week this season, you know, there's been a team near the top that has taken on the chin. And even Alabama could not escape that last week. And you know, it makes for a fun season, I'll tell you. You know, you got different teams up there every week. You just don't know what's going to happen. And, of course, everybody tries to predict, you know, what it's going to look like at the end of the season. And here we are, you know, basically about 2 weeks left in the season for most of the teams, and we still don't really know for sure. I don't think anybody can really say definitively that the top three teams that are there right now are going to be the top three teams in 2 weeks.
So you're telling these fans out there in our listening audience, buy the tickets right now. Get those Outback tickets right now because this will be a great matchup on New Year's Day.
Yeah, we've of course got the Big Ten and the SEC in our game every year. It's been a great, great matchup. We've had some great games. Two of the last 3 years, we've had overtime games. And the other year in between those two, we had it went down to the last minute. And Ahmad Black intercepted a pass and returned for a touchdown to secure a victory. So, you know, we've had some really good games. It's always fun to watch teams from the Big Ten, the SEC, go at it against each other. They don't typically get to play each other on a normal basis, at least, in the regular season. And so there's a lot of bragging rights there, and it's a lot of fun. And you're right, Tommy, the tickets are on sale, Ticketmaster. You know, we always encourage people to get tickets as soon as they can. It's a great way to, you know, buy a Christmas present for the college football fan in your life. You know, get, you know, easy to get that shopping out of the way now. Don't have to go out on Black Friday or Cyber Monday or whatever. Just, you know, get you some Outback Bowl tickets, and I will guarantee that no matter what team you're a fan of or what team, what school you went to, you know, going to a New Year's Day major college bowl game in our great stadium, it's a real treat for any college football fan. So we definitely encourage folks to get your tickets now, and we will announce our teams on December 2nd. But you know, no matter who it's going to be, we know it's going to be a good matchup. We're going to have some really good programs in there, and
Mike,
and with the SEC and the Big
the
Ten this year, they've got a lot of good teams.
Mike, I wanted to ask. I mean, didn't mean to interrupt. I wanted to ask you about the SEC. I was really impressed with Texas A&M on Saturday night against Alabama, and that freshman quarterback is like the real deal.
John Mizell.
He's unbelievable. But let me ask you, do you feel that with Texas A&M and the SEC now, that this can change the power structure of the SEC?
You mean having A&M in there? Or?
Yeah, having A&M is now in the conference, where, you know, it's always been pretty much Alabama, Florida, Georgia, LSU, you know, Auburn, 2 years ago. But do you see them as, like, one of the new power teams in the league, and that can really change the mix?
Well, you know what, though? It's a little bit like what you just said, though, Frank. I mean, you think about what you just said. You named off a lot of different teams that have had their turn as the power team in the SEC. I don't think the SEC year in and year out is so difficult, and there's so many great coaches, so much talent in that league, so many great programs, that I don't think anybody is a perennial powerhouse in the SEC. And what I mean by that is, you don't see, even Alabama, you don't see teams that dominate in that league for 10 straight years. You know, they come and go because every year and every game in that league is so difficult. It's an absolute war trying to get through that league, that conference schedule every year. And you know, teams come and go. I mean, like you said, 2 years ago, Auburn wins the national championship, and now they're struggling. LSU has had their turns to win the national championship. Florida won two national championships in a 3-year stretch, but then they struggled for a couple of years. Now they're starting to get back. You know, Tennessee, you know, has had their time. Now they're a little bit down. You know, they'll come back. Georgia, same way. You know, so it's difficult for a team to do that. So when you say, you know, Texas A&M, they're having a great year this year, no doubt. And they got an exceptional quarterback. They got a lot of talented players. They got an interesting style to them that those players bring to the game. And so they're doing very well this year. That's not to say Texas A&M is going to come in now and be a powerhouse every year in the SEC. They're going to have to earn it just like everybody else. And chances are they're going to end up, you know, having – you know, some good years and some bad years, like everybody else in the league. But with that, but what I think it does say is that was a good move for the SEC. They certainly deserved to be in the SEC, you know, with the talent they can get. And I think what it also does, I think we talked about this when they first came into the league, that what Texas A&M in part brings to the SEC is it exposes the SEC football to the state of Texas more, and it also will help enable the SEC, other schools in the SEC, to now go into the state of Texas and recruit even better than they have in the past. So I think, and the fact that Texas A&M has come to the forefront so quickly in the SEC, not only bolsters their ability to maybe even recruit from other states that the SEC normally gets teams from, but I think that that just has put the spotlight on not only the SEC but the state of Texas this year in the SEC, and that's going to help both Texas A&M and probably the other SEC schools.
Great point. Couldn't say it more. Mike, we're also joined by Rock Rowley from Bright House Sports. Rock is still on. Hopefully, Rock is still on.
Yeah, I am. I only got a couple of minutes. I got to go back. It's good to hear you, Mike.
Hey, Rock, how you doing, man? Great to hear you.
Good. This guy, I got to tell you, he and Jim McVay, man, of all the bowl games, when the teams come in, fans coming down here, they really treat the players, the teams, the fans better than any other bowl game. I swear to God.
Well, it takes a lot of people to do that, and the whole area does that too, Rock, and I appreciate you saying that. But, you know, and I've told these guys before, you know, and this is the honest God's truth, you know, every team that's come in here has told us that this is the best bowl trip in the country. And not only because of what we do, but the area, the amenities here, the stadium, they just absolutely love it. And they tell us, they say, well, you know, if we're a Big Ten team, sure, we want to go to the Rose Bowl because of the tradition and win the Big Ten and all that. But if we could pick any bowl trip to actually take, it would be to Tampa, Florida. So this that's a credit to everybody in the area that supported the bowl game for the last 26 years.
Starts at the top, Mike.
That's right. You and Jim do a great job, and I'm looking at a football, Mike. 20-year, 2008, and like Rock and I were saying, to everybody, we're not getting older, we're getting better.
Well, I'll say one thing: for the last 48 hours, everybody knows where Tampa is.
Yeah.
That's right. Based on Boulevard, not too far from the Forum.
Yeah, we're back in the news, aren't we? That's amazing. I guess it just shows we didn't have to spend $50 million on the RNC. All we had to do is, have a few emails sent to the wrong people, and we could have got just as much exposure.
A bit of trouble. Just bring Kelly down. She'll entertain for you.
Telephone call for Dr. Kelly. Telephone call for Dr. Kelly.
Oh, no.
They will invite her to sing the national anthem at the bowl game or something.
Oh, my God.
She and her sister are in debt to about $3 million. I heard that tonight.
That's probably not a good thing.
Foundation he started. They took all the money. It's unbelievable. He's a doctor. And, unbelievable. They raised all that money and they took it all.
Getting back to college football, though, guys, I'll tell you what. It's been a great year. We're excited coming down to the wire here the last few weeks of the season. We're excited from the Bulls' perspective. We're excited about naming our teams in a couple weeks and having another fun matchup and looking forward to all the great events leading up to the bowl game and having lots of folks here to see what the area has to offer and hopefully watch another great game on New Year's Day.
Exactly.
Mike,
you have any leads you would want to tell us that you might be looking at this point?
Well, you know, there's a lot of good teams in both leagues. The SEC, you know, I think we're going to end up with a top 10 team in the SEC by virtue of the fact that you got six of them right now in there. So I seriously believe that we'll end up with a top 10 team coming in here from the SEC. Not exactly sure which one it's going to be, but an awful lot of good choices. And you know, there could very easily be, I believe, six teams in the SEC that could finish with at least 10 wins.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing. So we know that. The Big Ten, there's a couple teams, Ohio State and Penn State, obviously are not bowl eligible this year, which is too bad. But with that said, there's a number of other good teams, Wisconsin and Nebraska, it looks like, at least as of right now. We'll probably be playing the Big Ten championship game. The winner of that game will go to the Rose Bowl. We could end up with the team, one of those two teams that does not win the Big Ten championship game, or maybe Michigan or Northwestern or somebody like that. So there's some really good teams, there that we can match up against the SEC and have a great game.
And the main thing, those teams travel well. That's the main thing. Great for the city of Tampa, the Tampa Bay area. Great for the bowl game itself. And Mike, one more time, how can he contact you at the bowl office to be a part of this great event New Year's Day?
Well, the first of all, you know, to get tickets to the game, probably the easiest way is just to go to Ticketmaster.com and buy your tickets through there. And again, I encourage you again sooner than later. Because when we do announce the teams, a lot of times the tickets get eaten up pretty quickly at that point. There are premium seat tickets available through our membership program, which you can find out about at our website at outbackbowl.com, and on how to get those and what those include. And then we also, of course, are all over social media on Facebook and Twitter and such, that you can follow what's happening with the bowl. And the Outback Bowl website also has an item right now that's up on the homepage where we have a fan poll, where fans can go on there and they can vote for the teams they would like to most see play in our bowl game this year. So that's always fun to watch, to see who the fans are rooting for us to choose out of the Big Ten, the SEC. So they can go on our website at outbackbowl.com and vote for the teams that they want. You guys can do that too, and let us know who you'd like to see in the game and see what happens. Yeah,
I'll tell you, if you go by our selections last week in the National Football League, you don't want us picking.
don't predict who you think will be in the game. Pass that up.
As Mike said, when you have six teams in the top ones in the country out of the SEC, you can't make a mistake.
No. I mean, we're gonna have a fun matchup regardless. So it's just a matter of which ones are gonna be in there. So yeah, but no, that's what. See, the problem that you guys have when you pick these games, to try and see who's going to win, is you go with your heart, see? You go with your emotions, and you pick the ones you want to win, right? So that's what we want on our fan poll, is we want to know who you want to be in the game, not who you think's going to win, because we know you can get that right.
That counts me out, Mike. I haven't won a poll all week, all year, so I
better... Rock will probably get them right. Rock knows more about this stuff than you guys. He'd probably get them right, but you guys have no idea what you're doing.
No, I don't know. But no, seriously, the Outback Bowl is second to none. It's great. It is great. It is great.
I appreciate that.
Got it.
I double that.
Listen, I got to run here, but Tom, it was a pleasure. All you
thank
guys
you.
Enjoy. You sound like you got a great
thanks,
show,
Rock.
Gentlemen.
Thank you, Rock.
It's been talking to you.
Thank you, Rock. It's an honor. It's an honor to know Rock Rowley, a Tampa Bay sports legend for Bright House Network and all the other stuff he does in the area. Rock's a legend in this town, right, Mike? I can second that right now. He's a great guy.
He's one of the best guys out there in sports in Tampa Bay area, and just a total professional and gentleman, and he knows his stuff. He's really really good.
Yes, he knows his stuff up there. And you want to speak about football, Paul? You want to join us this week, Mike, in picking a winner, or what?
For who?
or football, Paul, or NFL, Paul, every week.
Oh yeah.
All right, I'm gonna get it out right now. We still got the Roger number two on, or
Roger number one.
I'm still here.
I'm Roger number two, and we got Ken going. Roger number one there.
Yeah, I'm here, guys. Yeah, my observation this evening was about the Eagles. You were talking about them earlier, and I'll make this quick because I know you want to get to the picks. I think the Eagles' problems. Well, when you take the fact away that they don't like to tackle people, but anyway, when their problem started, it started in the locker room. And it was at a TV interview when Vince Young, the backup quarterback that year, stepped on his tongue and said that he mentioned the Dream Team. And after that, the media picked up on that. And I think they thought all they had to do was show up and they'd win. And they forgot the game was being played on the field. And that's all
I
wanted to say this evening.
That's right.
Okay. All right, who wants to lead off the picks this week? Tampa Bay at Carolina. I got the Bucs. I'm a homer, so what else is new? I got Tampa Bay. Gentlemen?
Tommy, I'm going to go with you. I think Greg Schiano has done a great job to here, and even though it could be a bit of a surprise, I don't think so. I'm going to go with Tampa Bay.
All right, Mike, who are you picking? Buccaneers at Carolina.
Well, you know, I'm not sure about that, but I'll go with Tampa Bay this week, just because I know the Carolina, I know they struggled with them quite a bit, but they did well against them earlier in the year, and I think that the way they're playing right now, that they're going to be able to get them this week.
Okay. All right,
I think if they played him 10 times, I think Carolina would still beat him about seven times. But
yeah.
I think they'll get him this week.
All right, Raj.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Tampa too. I just have that gut feeling that they've got Greg's got that team in a roll, and I guess I'm prejudiced because he went to Bucknell and my daughter went to Bucknell, but I really think that he's done a great job.
All right, Frank.
Well, I don't think nothing could be funner than to be in Carolina and watch you guys go down.
See what you missed on the show, Mike?
Go.
All right, and Dan for golf, Dan?
Doug's still here.
Doug, who are you picking?
I'm going to go with Tampa Bay. I think the sophomore slump continues for Cam Newton.
Oh, okay. All right, next game's going to be tomorrow night, Miami at the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to pick Miami, I guess. Gentlemen, who's up?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills. Miami really, they shocked me last week. I thought they were going to play a much better game than they played. Now they got to go on the road. They're going to play in Buffalo. It's going to be cold. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with Buffalo.
All right, gentlemen.
I'm going to have to go with Buffalo just because they're playing Miami.
Okay. All right. Who's up, gentlemen?
I'm going to take the Dolphins, Tom.
Ooh, okay. Thank you. Frank?
Ain't enough fish to make the Dolphins do nothing. I got go with the Bills.
Okay, Bills. Doug?
You're getting smarter, Frank, every week.
I'll take the Buffalo Bills. I think the running back by committee situation there has been solved, and C.J. Spiller's the man, so he's pretty electric.
I'm telling you, guys, you're on a roll. You won it last week. I haven't won it all year, for Pete's sake.
I realize the Cleveland Indians. You just show up, but you don't win.
Hey, yes, the Patriots are super here with some cheese for that wine.
Roger, you're going to see a good football game. Arizona comes to Atlanta. I'm going to go with the Atlanta Falcons. Who's up, gentlemen?
I'm going with the Falcons, too. They're not going to have two games in a row like that. I'm Falcons.
Okay. Roger, this is your hometown.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Falcons because their record after a loss is very positive. Mike Smith does not allow them to really go on a losing streak. And I also think, and we talked about it many times, it's tough for a team coming from the West to come East. Much harder than the Eastern teams going West.
Okay. Capone thinks so, too, so we backed it up. Okay. All right, Frank?
I think Falcons.
You got Falcons? Okay.
Yeah.
And can you hear Capone in the background backing up? Capone! I'm sorry, Doug.
The Falcons rebound here and win this week.
Okay. All right, it sounds good. No one picked Arizona. We got to all vote. The next game's going to be Cleveland at the Dallas Cowboys.
Jesus.
Don, this is like your San Diego. I'm sticking with my Browns.
No way I could bet on the Browns. If I had Chinese money, I wouldn't bet on it.
any given Sunday now, come
boy.
On.
I was going to say,
that
might not be too far in the future.
All right, I guess everybody's going to vote. I guess everybody for Dallas, and I'm stuck out with the Browns.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with Dallas this week.
Yeah. Big day. Okay. Yeah, Mike? Yep, Dallas.
Oh, geez. I'm
hey,
stuck
Tommy,
out the
law
ground.
Of averages, you have to win one week.
hey, Tommy and Frank, I called Don on Sunday night watching that Eagles game. You saw that piece on Jimmy Johnson and Buddy Ryan?
Oh, yeah.
Was that a classic? I started laughing. I called Don right away because it all brought back those memories. You know, when Jimmy says, Buddy's afraid the biggest big fat ass in here to face me. And Buddy's response was, hey, I'm on a diet. I've lost a few pounds.
That's right. I remember that. Oh, my God. That was so funny.
Oh, Buddy was the best.
He was unbelievable.
Oh, Green Bay at the Lions. Guys, I'm going to go with Green Bay. Probably smart pick there, Green Bay. Gentlemen?
Boy, I hate to do it, but, boy, Detroit looked awful last week. I'm going to go with Green Bay as well. I thought Detroit would be a much better team than they are.
Okay, Roger?
I'm going to take Green Bay.
Okay. Mike?
Green Bay.
Jeez, oh my. Doug?
I'm going to take the over.
Okay.
I'll take Green Bay. I think it's a shootout.
Hey, Frank?
Yeah, I'll take Green Bay.
Oh, okay. Everybody's got the same one. Okay. Well, all right. The next game is going to be a very interesting game. I'm going to dig it up here for us here. All right. Ready for the next game? It's Jacksonville at Houston. That's a no-brainer. That could be all same problem.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I hope nobody gets killed.
Right.
I'm going to go with Houston.
I got the same for everybody, so we're just going to.
All right. Cincinnati. What point do the backups get in the game?
Right.
Oh, Cincinnati at the Chefs. The Chefs are awful, so I'm going to go with the Bengals.
Well, I'll tell you, I think Rex either wins this week or he is really, really in trouble. At home, they're having trouble selling tickets. They're in all kinds of trouble. I'm going to say the Jets win this week.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. The Bengals at the Chefs. I'm sorry, Kansas City. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought you said
okay.
Jets.
The Jets
are still
winning the game.
I can't bet on Kansas City. I'll go the other way.
I guess it could be the same. Anybody for Kansas City?
Hold that thought there, big boy. Remember my grandson's named after that quarterback.
That's
so
right.
Going that
that's
way.
Right.
He never played. He never played. He's only
won on Monday night against the Steelers.
That's right. You never give up on Notre Dame or a quarterback.
Tony Moliaki had a pretty good week, too.
Yeah.
Is he going to play this week, Frank?
I'm looking for him.
Is he going to play? Okay. All right.
Frank doesn't know either.
No, I don't.
All right, Jenna. There you go. The Jets at the St. Louis Rams. That tie... it's the only tie they did back in 2000 and since 2002, the Rams. The Jets are a shambles. I'm going with the St. Louis Rams.
They're in St. Louis?
Yeah, in St. Louis.
I'm going with Fisher, too.
Okay.
Yeah. I think St. Louis is the pick here.
Okay. Mike?
You know what? I'm going to go with them as well.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And Frank?
Rams.
Okay. That's the same. Okay.
Tommy, you know what was interesting in that game? It was a shame that David Akers missed that field goal.
That's right. That's right. Oh, that game kept on going on and on. Akers missed a clutch, missed that field goal. Speaking about a clutch team going down the drain real fast, Philadelphia at Washington. This might be the game blacked out in Philadelphia. People are turning the TV sets off here, but there we go. Go the Eagles.
In Philadelphia, they got to turn their attention toward international soccer.
For the Sixers.
I hate to do it, but I'm going to go with Washington.
Okay. All right, Roger?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Washington, but I'll tell you, Don, it was great to see Brant Dunphy's team beat Kent State yesterday.
How about that? And pretty handily, 14 points.
Yes, they did. They look great.
Yes. Mike?
Redskins.
Ooh, okay. Doug?
I'm going to make a lot of people listen to this show very happy. I'm going to pick the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yay!
Who's going to be the quarterback? They might run a
single
wing this week.
I just can't imagine that they're going to continue this losing streak. And at some point, they're going to figure out that LeSean McCoy is one of the best backs in the league. and I think he's going to be able to carry them. But here's the question. The question is, of all the Rocky movies, what's the best song on any of the soundtracks?
Eye of the Tiger?
That's a good one. Just a question.
I guess Eye of the Tiger. All right, Frank, big decision here. Eagles at Washington.
Well, as you know, Bobby and the heavyweight Tony Thompson always had a bet on this thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I told Tony that I would carry on Bobby's bet. So I got to go with the Eagles. But, boy, if they lose, I'm going to look like crap in that high heels and shorts running around the neighborhood.
But you why
would you be so shocked at your normal dress?
Plus the high heels. I usually just use sneakers.
You can't go down to Cherries now. All right, Saints at the Oakland Raiders. I'm going to go to New Orleans playing some great football. Gentlemen?
I'd like to have Drew Brees on my fantasy football team this week. Saints win that game.
Yep, okay. I'm with you. I'm going Saints as well.
All right, Roger?
They're playing in Oakland, right, Tom?
Yes, in Oakland, yes.
I'm going to take the Raiders.
Ooh, that's a great test.
I think Brees' streak is over, huh, Roger?
Uh-oh.
Well, I wouldn't say his streak is over, but I think that if anybody can bring them down at this point in the season, I think the Raiders, for some reason, rise to the top in certain games. And I just have that feeling about this one.
Okay.
Ooh. Okay, Mike, who are you picking?
Drew Brees. I haven't bet against Drew Brees since he played in our bowl game in 2000.
MVP
is phenomenal.
MVP, it's a great football game. I still remember that. Frank?
Yeah, I think I don't want Roger to stand that in the cold by himself.
Why? He's done it before.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't want him to do it now.
All right. Next up is
Don, if you want to jump in with us.
Next up is Don, San Diego Chargers.
Who are they playing this week?
Denver. I got Denver.
Oh, I
had
thought
enough
it was Alabama they
Sunday.
Were playing. I'm gonna. Okay, Denver's turned it around. I want to tell you they've got a pretty good team right now. How could you bet against Denver?
No Norv, huh?
No.
Okay, Roger.
Oh, listen, I'm taking Denver. I think that Peyton's got that team in a roll.
Oh, you're exactly right.
All right, Mike.
Where's that game at?
San Diego at Denver, Mile High City.
Yeah, that's Denver all the way.
Okay. We got Frank.
Well, after one of my guys arrest the homeless guy for charging his phone in the city park, I think I'll go with Denver so nobody will know that I'm from Sarasota.
All right, Doug. One last time, San Diego at Denver.
I'm going to take Denver, and here's the thing. I'm also part of the Not North Turner fan club, and coach is on his way out when he gets to the rant stage. You know, remember Dennis Green? The Bears are who we thought they were, and he was gone, all that kind of stuff. North Turner, lame duck, he's out, Denver wins.
But it's post game. I'm standing up there. Then I went to the DoubleTree to watch the Eagles game. Everyone and I see my recorder right up to Norv's microphone. Where he's talking about that one cut. I start laughing a second to Leo Paul Perrone. There's Norv in my hand up there. I thought it was part of Soupy Sales up there. White Thang up there.
Playoffs.
Yeah, playoffs.
All right. Next, Colts at the Patriots. I'm gonna go with Captain Happy this week.
I go with Captain Happy every week. I'm going with them absolutely, the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Patriots.
Okay, Doug.
Yeah, I hate to pick them, but you have to go with the Patriots. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mike.
Yeah, the Patriots at home.
Okay, Frank.
Make it a sweep.
A queen sweep? How many sweeps we had? I'm telling you. All right, Sunday night.
I'll tell you
Baltimore.
One thing about that game, though. There's going to be a lot of points scored in that thing. I mean, that defense for the Patriots is really, really shaky. I mean, you could throw the ball against them pretty effectively. I think this is going to be like a 40-38 game or something like that.
It's going to look like the AFC-NFC Pro Bowl where they don't tackle anybody or rush the passer.
Well, it's shocking because Mr. Happy normally is a very defensive conscious, but whether he's lost too many players or what the heck has happened, they gave up points.
I know, that's just unreal. All right, I know what Frank said better in this game. Baltimore at Pittsburgh, I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens and Mr. Joe Flacco. I know Frank's got the Baltimore Ravens, so I'm putting Frank down here.
That's
all right, Don.
I'll go with Baltimore and Flacco.
Okay. All right, Roger?
Yeah, Baltimore.
Okay, Doug?
But, you know, I'm going to show my colors here. I'm a huge Ravens fan. I love Baltimore Ravens, and this is the biggest game, you know, of the week. And, you know, we talked, guys, last week about me going up to Oakmont to play and a quick little funny story. But my caddy was wearing all kinds of Steelers stuff, and about halfway through the round, it got a little warm, and he said to me, he says, Doug, you mind if I put my jacket in your golf bag? And I said, yeah, go ahead. I'm getting a new golf bag soon anyway. So you know, we didn't want the Steelers stuff to rub off on me. So we're making it without any more
Oh, my God. All right, Mike, who do we have? Baltimore at Pittsburgh.
I'm going to go against the grain here and go with the Steelers.
Ooh. Uh-oh. Yeah.
How about their quarterback? You're going with a team with no quarterback.
Well, you know, I just have a feeling that this is going to be an upset special this week.
All right, Byron Leffridge. Okay, Monday night game.
We have to have him back next week, definitely, because we have to talk about when Leffridge throws about 8 interceptions.
That's right. All right, Chicago at San Francisco. I'm going to go with the Bears.
I'm going San Francisco. The Bears had an interesting game the other night if you wanted to fall asleep. I'm going with the Harbaugh boys.
Yep.
Roger?
I think I'm going to go with the 49ers, too, at home.
Ooh, okay. All right, Doug, who are you going to
I'm going to take the 49ers as well. I agree. The Harbaugh sure can coach.
Okay. All right, Mike?
Oh, 49ers.
Jeez, I'm out here on a limb. All right, Frank, you going to join me over here?
I left my heart in San Francisco, but I love the Bears.
Hunter's got a concussion.
That's all for this week. That's all, folks, for this week. Thank you all. So we have to get the golf tip of the week, Doug. Come on, give us the golf tip of the week. Come on, we got to get you on for that. Okay, you got to tell us what golf tip of the week for us.
I got the floor for a second. Well, listen, I know it's an interesting situation where we have, some of our listeners in, I guess, the Tampa area, and certainly I'm calling from Baltimore, and then I suppose we have some Philadelphia listeners as well. So, you know, obviously in the Northeast, we're trying to close up our season. Obviously down in the South, they're just starting to get cranked up, but one of the best tips I can give you, whether you're, winding down your season or just starting your season, is to try to take a look at some of the aspects of your game that could use some of the most help. And what I like to tell people from a lesson standpoint is, imagine yourself playing a golf course that's the par is 72. You hit every green in regulation and you two-putt, every green. That gives you, your 72. So you've now spent 50% of your strokes getting to the green, 50% of the strokes actually on the green, and that would be considered obviously a wonderful ball striking round. So the tip of the week is the best way to improve your game is to spend as much time as you can either on the green practicing your putting or around the greens, practicing your chipping and some of your pitches. But what are you going to do from a mathematical standpoint when you're not hitting greens and that kind of balance shifts its way to 40-60 or 30-70 in terms of, blowing your scores. So the best tip I can give you guys for the week is to really sharpen your game by spending as much time as you can, on the greens and around the greens. Unfortunately, as males, we let our ego kind of get in the way sometimes, and we always want to go to the driving range and pull out the driver and see how far we can hit it. And unfortunately, the most times we can probably do that in a round of golf is 14. And although I'm a big advocate of driving the golf ball very well, we all know that, what do they say, you drive for show, but you putt for dough. So spend some time around the greens, and your scores will definitely lower.
Well, thank you. I have to try that this week. Mike, we have to try it after the Outback Bowl is over. Go out and play some golf, and we'll come back to Doug's Tip in a week. And we're like, hey, we gotta start doing that.
Yeah, the problem though is the first we got to get over the first hurdle. And that's get out to the golf course.
Well, this year we got to do it.
Well, hey, listen, try to work that into the ticket price.
Hey, you know what? But I got to tell you, I got to second what he just said, because in my personal life in my game of golf is that what I learned a long time ago, and it was mostly because I cut a lot of my teeth playing golf on a course with elevated small greens.
Yep.
And I learned really quickly I can't score unless I can get up and down, because I'm going to miss greens. But if I can learn to chip well, and get myself, you know, to where I can one putt, then I can score. And that's that absolutely turned around my game, is working on my chipping and my putting. And because I know I'm going to miss greens, but if I can get up and down, then you make up for that. So,
well, that's the best reason to take Tommy with you when you play, because you have him stand on one side of the green and you're always putting uphill.
Yeah,
well,
the last
golf to find out
was put the clubs back in the bag.
Doug, we'll have to take a road trip and see your golf course and show you what Don said, extending the other side up there and that. So, but I tell you, another help for him, I guess, for rather any golfer, I guess, probably if you're playing, you know, like by yourself or someone with you, you take your clubs to the green, you get playing by the flagstick. Because, A, you always got to pick up the flagstick, and your clubs will have to be, whose clubs are they? Because so many golfers, they leave their clubs along the greens, and they're trying to find them. I always tell the guys to play, leave your clubs on top of the flag. So they say, why?
Yeah.
You got to pick up the flag, and the clubs are going to be right on top of the flag.
You're exactly
absolutely
right.
Well, you know, here in Baltimore, the club that I work, Hayfields Country Club, each time, usually during this time of season when we're trying to wrap some things up, you know, I like to go through the bag room and I look at all the members' bags, and if they don't have name tags on their clubs, then we like to make those. We have a system that prints those, and, you know, we spend some time making sure that's the case. So just some identification labels, something simple too, in case you do actually leave the club, is always helpful as well.
Hi, how's your greens up there? Are people still playing up there?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we were probably close to 50 degrees today with a little bit of wind, and it was quite chilly. This is the time of year we start running into some, you know, frost delays and some cooler mornings. But we must have had probably, you know, 20 or 30 people go out and play, and a lot of folks like to walk this time of year for some good exercise. But, you know, the golf course is still in some really good shape, and, you know, it was really conducive to a solid non-winter that we had last year with virtually no snow. So, the members around here have been pretty spoiled in golf in general, and, you know, it's been great for the golfing industry as a whole. You know, a lot of the public golf courses in this area and further north really struggle during the wintertime, because if they have snow, certainly they have no revenue that comes in. So, you know, everybody had a bonus year this year.
Did you get any of that snow from the storm, or did that go more to the west of you?
We did not, actually. We did not have any snow. You know, the quote-unquote superstorm Sandy provided about 8 inches of rain for us, though, which was, you know, problematic for some bunkers and those sorts of things that we're actually now still trying to address some of the drainage issues from that aspect. So, but I think most superintendents in this area would tell you that they actually enjoy getting a little bit of snow for the winter, because that kind of blanket provides some insulation, and come springtime, you know, things tend to be a little bit greener with a little bit of snowfall. So it's, you know, it's beneficial for water tables. It's good to give the golf course a little bit of a rest to, you know, help some growth and regenerate some things. And, you know, like I said, most superintendents would probably tell you they like just a little bit of snow for the winter.
Good.
Well, I remember living outside of Philadelphia, and then Donegan and everybody, Frank and Rising, and maybe Mike could vouch for this. I remember one day, gentleman playing rowing green with my father one day, and here was, this had to be the worst condition day. We teed off, it was 38 degrees, you know, 11 o'clock. He had a drizzle, sleet, snow, and the sun came out. So that'd be the worst round of golf, because you see all different participation coming out there, and the sun finally came out around the 18th hole. Oh, this has been fun out here, you know. But But, you know, any tips today about for people playing golf in the wintertime? Any tips you could tell our listeners up north?
Well, you know, some of the biggest tips, obviously from the wintertime aspect, again, is you know, a lot of members, a lot of players like to get out and get some exercise and just walk, you know, and try to, you know, increase some cardio in that aspect. So if you're used to kind of riding, this is a good time of year. Maybe you don't have to play the full round of golf, but maybe get out and take a good walk and carry your clubs and take a few clubs out of your bag, you know, obviously, and, you know, lighten the load up just a little bit. But so certainly the exercise aspect is always good. But, you know, don't be so – this time of year, obviously, we go to maybe some shorter tees. A lot of the golf courses in this area will either go to temporary greens or temporary tees for – just to kind of lessen some of the damage that people create from divots and that sort of thing. But, you know, don't be so concerned with your scores. Be more concerned with some of the aspects of your game that you'd like to see improved and get out and try to work on those. And, you know, most importantly, it's like I always say, obviously distance is important. But golf, as we know it, is a timeless game. And the comment earlier was about, you know, the tip was about chipping and putting and that sort of thing. And we know that when we get a little older, we lose a little bit of flexibility. We lose a little bit of distance. And that's why your short game becomes, you know, even more important, because it takes some of the stress off of your entire game in general. So don't be so concerned with your score this time of year. But, you know, be more concerned with picking your target and hitting your golf ball to your target. And as you remember, for any of our listeners out there, last week we talked about some of the pre-shot fundamentals with alignment and that sort of thing. So, you know, kind of put some of that stuff together and try to get out and work on your game a little bit during the winter in a less stressful environment.
I think one of the outstanding moves they've made, and they've advertised it so much on all the national golf now, is the step-up tees. You know, if it's impossible you to get to the greens in regulation, even if you hit your two best shots, you're on the wrong tee.
Yep. Well, yeah, that was one of the big things. Alan Ranowski, the PGA Golf, the PGA Association's president, just stepped down. And he actually came from a local club here in Maryland, Hillendale Country Club, which, by the way, is the only country club in America to boast two presidents of the PGA, which is kind of a neat little fact. Mm-hmm. But one of the big advocacies of the PGA was to try the Tee It Forward program to help people enjoy the game a little bit more, to, you know, essentially have people play from the correct set of tees so that when they're hitting shots into greens, they're not hitting fairway woods on par fours and hybrids and that sort of thing. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, why do you want to keep doing something that's not fun?
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that, unfortunately, we're losing some of our players to the fact that their scores are increasing, the golf courses are getting longer, they're getting harder, and it's just overall more difficult. And why pay for something like that, you know, day in, day out, or week in, week out, when it's just not as fun as it used to be? So, again, you know, this is a great time of year to kind of work on some of that stuff and, you know, tee it forward. Go out and have a little bit of fun.
Definitely. Guys,
I think that was President Obama's message, too, tee it forward or something.
It could have been.
Gentlemen, right up against the clock, I'd like to thank Mike Schulze for coming on. Mike, the same time next week. Love to have you come on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank
Take
you.
Care,
like to
Mike.
Thank Doug thank Doug for coming on. Same time.
And fellas,
next week.
Let me just say, you know, Roger's wife had a pretty serious operation today, so we all wish her the very, very best of luck, and for Roger to pass that along to her from all of us.
I will, Don.
God
thank
bless
you,
Roger.
I really appreciate everybody's support, and she was in good spirits. She's going to be in the hospital about 4 days, but hopefully this surgery is going to eliminate the pain that she's had, which has just been debilitating in her leg and her feet. So
great.
Great. We'll say a prayer for her, Roger.
I will. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it very much.
Don, thank you for coming on. Same
Take
time
care,
next week.
Gentlemen. Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Yes,
Roger, have a great weekend, guys. God bless.
Thanks
God
for
bless
having
you
me. You guys are awesome.
You're Roger.
Thank you.
Frank, I didn't forget about you. I got the box. I'm going to mail it tomorrow. You're going to be in for a nice surprise.
I'll call you later on anyway. I got to get an address from you.
Okay, I'll talk to you later then. Take care.
Okay. Wow. Frank, who can we thank? I'd like to thank former Major League Baseball pitcher Darryl Knowles, Mike Schulze from the Outback Bowl, special guest Rock Rowley from Bright House Sports, Doug, a professional golf tip of the week, of course, legends from Atlanta, Roger Handler, Don Henderson from Philadelphia, down here in Sarasota, and a legend from Parrish. Legend is all mine, Mr. Frank Carroll. And most of all, I'd like to thank Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. Purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Give Tim Baker a call. He won't call, so you call him 352-588-5454. And the Abbey Course, St. Louis University. Give Tom a call, 352-588-2016. Frank, the guys want to do a show tomorrow, next week, so you want to do it next week? It's up to you.
Yeah, it's fine with me.
All right, well, they want to do it. And now, Frank, God bless all the kids. And until next week, Frank, take it away, sir.
All right, well, we want to especially thank the four members of the AB Honor Roll of the of Wakeland Elementary, Ty, Trevor, Brady, and Caden. We also want to remind everybody that these programs are brought to you each and every night in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. Please, when you're out there and you see someone in uniform, introduce your children to them. Let them know that they are people. Keeping our freedom, us free and our freedom in shape. We especially send these programs out in memory of fallen officers, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Baker, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Serba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Patrolman Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Police, and Patrolman Brian Murphy of the Plymouth Township, Pennsylvania Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the sun shine on your face. May the rains fall softly on your field. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands.
Shemalek ma'yelama, shemahezahilma, sona shenevoratfet, akuigegen ma'yelma.
Shemalek ma'yelama, shemahezahilma.
match, the 1999. County Dispatch, the 1999. County Dispatch, the 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is now 10-7. May God rest his soul.